Rapid fire glasses.
So we're going to start it off right now. This is the albumreview.net podcast presents Rapid Fire Roundtable. I'm joined by two of my close friends here, close friends and colleagues that I wanted to quickly introduce, Kevin Banks and Steve Broadley. Both Kevin and Steve are music nuts like me, and we're going to go through some rapid-fire roundtable questions right now. I invite anyone who's listening to this right now to send us a message back at gpotters@albumreview.net if you have any thoughts, ideas, if you disagree with what we're saying, if you agree, or maybe we've just piqued your curiosity. Steve and Kevin, thank you guys for joining me. This is I really appreciate you guys taking the time on this very first. This isn't necessarily an episode per se. This is really more of like a trial. So we're going to see how this goes, but I'm going to put it out there. So you guys better do a good job or else I'm really going to get ticked off. Kevin, let's start with you. Could you just tell the listeners a little bit about what you do?
I am an independent freelance art director after spending about 25 years in the trenches in downtown Boston. I went independent about 10 years ago. And I do a lot of branding and identity and logos and websites for small companies and startups. I love, being my own business owner. But when I'm not doing design work or artwork or illustration or, anything illegal, I'm listening to music and talking about it.
And give us a shameless plug. Like, tell us the name of your company and where can we go to contact you when we need your professional skills?
for a sample of my work, just look no further than the albumreview.net logo. And you can find me.
That's right. That's right. Kevin is the designer of the albumreview.net logo with the record. So that was all him.
And you can find the rest of my catalog at ClaymoreGoBoom.com.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Nice. Thank you.
Steve Broadley, who is a friend, neighbor, confidant, colleague, fellow shed builder. Steve, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Greg, thank you, first of all. And thanks, Kev. This is really great to be here. I really am honored to be a part of this pilot, if you will. I'll stick with the music stuff. Always a fan of music since early childhood, like anybody. Got the bug to perform early, where I, took lessons how to be a drummer. My brothers were guitar players. Just picked up guitar and studying music, just a fan and exploring different genres and trying to understand what the artists were trying to get across. Eventually became a music instructor, where I have, students that I teach guitar and music, kind of demystifying the fretboard. Love to talk about music. I love to talk about music with you, Greg and Kev. I always come away from those conversations a little wiser or even a little more adamant in my position.
It's always an
excellent conversation.
Steve, you also have several years, decades of video editing experience.
Yeah, that's very true.
A master at that.
In my other life, that's what I do for
video
for,
and sound and yes.
Yeah. Awesome. Video editing, visual communications.
Steve, can I ask what's the mic that you're using? Do you mind
giving No, this is the Blue Nano mic.
Okay.
And I needed it for
it. Sounds really good.
For clarity.
Kevin, you're no, just kidding.
It's a condenser mic, right? And wanted something very simple. There are higher end ones. This was maybe $100 or something like that.
So Steve and Kevin have a few years on me, so they can really school me in certain areas. I was a teenager in the 90s. You guys had a few years on me, so you could teach me a little bit. But first question I wanted to ask is, you're flying on an airline across the pond and you're in first class. You sit down and you realize the person sitting next to you is Sting. He's unusually chatty today. Kevin, what's the first thing you ask him? Kevin, do you jump in right away or do you do what I would do, which would be holy shit, for 20 minutes before I actually get the balls to turn and talk to him?
I would, I would take, like, when I met Tarantino, I would take the everyman approach, like, hey, how are you?
What do you do? What is it that you do again?
Yeah. And just and take the soft, you know, soft step and just say, how are things going today? And just anything but the fanboy, groupie, hyperactive routine.
And then, okay, but let's say, okay, fast forward 30 minutes later and you guys are hitting it off now. What is one question that you would want to ask him?
No, it's actually not a music question. It's actually, I would ask him, what was it like playing that freaky character in Dune? You know, but as far as Dune, he was so menacing and it just looked like a lot of fun. And having been involved in some short filmmaking, I was like, wonder, my question for him would be, you know, would you do it again?
Yeah. Nice. Steve, what about question. You? Same question.
Man, I don't know. I guess I had a little time to think about it. I think I would have.
It's okay.
I'd be a goofball. I know me. I would be like, if it sits down next to me, I'd be like, I'd let out as like soft as possible. Quiet. No, I'd be like, please don't sit so close to me.
So like you'd be Kevin Nealon in the elevator in that Saturday Night Live episode. Do you remember that?
No.
You don't remember that?
No.
Dude, you're either the biggest genius in the world or you've ripped off SNL. But you, there's an SNL episode from the early 90s where Kevin Nealon gets into an elevator and Sting is there. And he's standing there and he just kind of looks over, looks back in front. Then he looks back over again at Sting, looks to the front. You can tell his eyes are getting wider and wider. And he finally turns and says, hey, you're Sting, right? And he's just like, yeah. So then there's silence for about another 2 or 3 seconds. And then Nealon starts belting out, Roxanne!
Oh, yeah.
He kind of turns to him and he's like, you know that song, right? Right? You know, and Sting's reaction is the best part of the skit, but... Anyway,
I don't know. I didn't see that. It would have been better if he did sing. If he did sing, please don't stand so close to me.
So you'd start singing, and you know,
I just break the ice. You know,
no, he's sitting next to you, so to you. You know he's stuck with you. He's gonna answer the question, right?
Probably something about Stuart Copeland. Is Stuart Copeland really a dick?
I have a question. I have a question for Sting, but I'd only ask it in confidence. I saw him recently on the Kennedy Center Honors getting, you know, the award. And I would ask him, what was it like to sit through all those people, all those musicians butchering your songs?
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah.
You know, he was a good, really good sport about it. But
see how politically correct he was, right?
Yeah, like, that must have been brutal.
Coincidentally.
A rumor going around that he could like have sex for like 5 hours.
Yes, tantra.
Remember?
Yes.
That?
Yep.
Would
yep.
You, maybe I'd ask him that.
That's a great one. Yeah, that's a great one. He was in an interview one time in the 90s, I think, and he was talking about that. So
yeah.
Coincidentally, I was listening to an interview yesterday with Kevin Bacon, and it was on the Dax Shepard podcast. And Bacon said, like, early in his career, like right after Footloose came out, he was at a hotel and he found out that Sting was staying in the hotel. So he picked up the main phone and was like, Sting's room, please. And he goes, and lo and behold, they connected me. And Sting picks up and he goes, I didn't know what to say. So he goes, hey, Sting, this is Kevin Bacon. And he said there was about 5 seconds of delay. And then Sting just goes, fill me in. So for me, I have to admit, I'm a little bit in an advantage because I did have some time to think about this, but I couldn't really think of anything either. My go-to with celebrities, I always do the everyman thing too, Steve. Like when I met Benicio del Toro, I actually stooped to the level of asking him like, what is it you do? Because I just didn't want to come off as a fanboy. And then after it came out of my mouth, I was like, that was the dumbest thing you could have ever said. Like, so next time around, like be in the middle somewhere, right? But I would also ask him about Stuart Copeland because we all know he's one of the greatest drummers.
Yeah, he's a fantastic drummer, but I think he might be a dick.
I do follow him on Instagram.
What kind of answer do you think you'll get from Sting about Stuart Copeland other than like, piss off?
He strikes me as an honest guy, but he also, I think he would probably, answer kind of like Tom Brady, where he's not really giving you much, but he's not making it immediately obvious that he either loves or doesn't love him. Yeah. So, you know, I guess I would probably be asking Sting questions, and then the whole time he's answering me, I'm thinking of the next question to ask him. Yeah, I would ask him, like, what's the coolest place you've ever played? And that would probably only come after he and I, you know, shared a bottle of wine, because I'm assuming this is a cross, you know, Atlantic flight. Question two, the 90s are long gone. So what does alternative music mean today in the year 2022? Kevin.
I got an answer for that.
Okay. Steve, take it.
So alternative music, you know, deriving from punk and that sort of stuff. What the benefit that today's alternative artists have is that they have a great foundation. It's wonderful to my ear to be able to identify the lineage of where these bands are coming from, and then also appreciate that it's different. I think given the explosion in creativity and the music world and the technology available to create music, there's a lot of crap, because anybody can do it. Of course, there was a lot of crap way back when, but it also opens up doors where you're using these tools and this technology and the access to all these different types of influences to create something that's original and exciting. And so when I listen to alternative now, I get excited for where it's at and where it's going. That's how I feel. Does that answer your question, Greg? I think it does.
Wrong. That's my McLaughlin example. Yes. No, Steve, absolutely. 100%, man. And it's really what, you know, what you think about it too. But I think that's definitely insightful. Kev, what about you?
It's tough because I always, when I hear that word alternative, I always categorize it as people are thrown. It's like the media uses it to label things that they don't understand. So it's kind of a past tense term for me. Because back in like 85 and 86, I was living in New York, and I used to walk into CBGBs with my friends, and I didn't know who was playing, but it was always good. There were bands like Alice Donut, and I remember sitting on the stage listening to Living Color, and it was, you know, that intimate of a place when it was packed. You just sit wherever you found space. You know, I said this, you know, this is the real music experience for me. But, you know, alternative to what? You know, everything to me back then was just music, you know, in New York City, it was just music. I only found out later that these things like Jane's Addiction at the Beacon Theater on Halloween, that was just music. That was just a great show to be at. You know, I wish I could remember it.
Right.
I'll be there Sunday night.
But past tense, you know, I'm told that it's alternative music. And, you know, even in the early 90s, like when Pearl Jam's first album, 10, came out in 91. You know, it was all over WFNX and I think WBCN, two popular radio stations here in Boston. And we weren't throwing that word alternative around that much back then,
right?
Until late in the 90s, where I was with the Phoenix Media Group that owned WFNX. And it was clearly, it was a title that they threw around with abandon to differentiate itself from what the other radio stations were doing. You know, they were playing Lynyrd Skynyrd, were playing Joy Division. You know, so it came in useful, I think, in the late 90s.
Yeah, I have a whole host of different opinions about this. But I think, yeah, alternative to what? I think Eddie Vedder or Kurt Cobain used to say that all the time. You know, when I think of alternative music, my brain just immediately goes to the 90s and that genre, kind of that grunge genre. But it also is just less of the hoopla. I think what originally turned me on to alternative music, artists who are, they just get up on stage and play, as opposed to like, you know, fireworks, and as cool as fireworks are and all that. But to me, there's something about when, you know, when Unplugged came along, I was like, if you can entertain people just by sitting with, you know, four acoustic guitars or an acoustic bass and some drums, and you don't need any of the, all the explosions and all that, then you really have more talent. So when I hear someone say to me today, like, I'm alternative, part of me hopes two things. Number one, that they're alternative to kind of what's out there now, whatever that is, it's just different, right? So I'm, every morning I wake up praying that there's going to be some new kind of genre, at least rock related, that comes out. Because as we all know, when we looked at the charts back in you know, through the 70s, 80s, and even into the 90s, 75% of the bands, the songs were rock of some sort. So, but I also think when someone says alternative, I also, again, I do go back to that grittier, grungier, you know, I use the word dirty. When I did a review of Alice in Chains' album, Dirt, and their Unplugged album, I just kept using the word dirty, no pun intended, to the album name, because it just was a lot of minor chords. It was more like, hey, I wear jeans and a t-shirt, and I'm here to entertain you with my music. I'm not here to do an Axl Rose 45-minute conversation as to why I hate Vince Neil and why I hate St. Louis. You know, like that's really what attracted me to that. So if there are artists that are kind of doing that today, yeah, I don't know if that necessarily answers the question, but I think more of this roundtable is just to really discuss our thoughts and how we feel. And if anyone doesn't like it, you can go f yourself. So do you guys agree with the generalization that music sucks these days, or is this really just about someone's personal taste? Steve, let's start with you.
Sure. I don't think the music sucks these days. I think the pool is much bigger for original music because of the accessibility that the general public has. But with that, the fraction of good music is grown as well. So you just have to, you know, search for it, and you will find really clever and talented artists out there producing original sounds, just being all about the music. Yeah, you'll get the, you know, I'll call it plastic music. And there's a market for that. Like people dig it. And I think that's relating back to, you know, what we're talking about just earlier about alternative and what the definition is. I would say the definition would be something that isn't on mainstream, that you have to search out and find something you're not gonna find on a radio station getting crammed down your throat telling you that this is good. It's exciting to me. Like I said, it gets me excited about the state of music as it exists today and where it's going in the future.
Sinead O'Connor? I mean, Kevin Banks?
I love that question, because I challenge anybody to disagree with me. There is no music that sucks. And I challenge people, if you think music sucks, go out and try to write a song.
Great point.
You know? Music is art, you know, and a lot of it's subjective, and what it does for me, it may not do for Greg, it may not do for Steve. When I sit down and I want to listen to something for my own pleasure, you know, I'll go into a back catalog, and trust me, you know, there's decades there. But one day I was walking by my daughter's room, and I heard this song coming out of the room, and I said, well, that's pretty different and pretty catchy. And I leaned in there and I said, who is this? And she said, this is Billie Eilish. And, you know, sensing that her dad might like the same music as her, she shut the door on me. Is Billie Eilish alternative? I don't know. Is it new? Yeah, you know, I would say new. But it teaches me to keep my ears open to things that are different from what I'm comfortable with. And I'm reminded of this wise old man that I met, I think when I was 12, who introduced me to Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, and The Doors all on the same day in his basement. And changed my life. That would be Mr. Broadley. Who we're talking about.
That's a whole nother.
I remember that.
Diving into those. Kev, you bring up a good point with Billie Eilish. I agree with you. I wasn't even thinking that when you first started talking, but you know, my kids listen to her now, and I think that she is somewhat alternative to some of the other music. I did get a chance to watch a Billie Eilish, I don't want to call it a documentary, but I think it was called, I'm blanking
on it. I saw that, Greg.
It'll come to me in a minute. No, you know what it was? It was David Letterman. It's on Netflix. I'm blanking on the name of it, but it was really, really good. She's different. Does she just like sit there and play her own instruments? It's really more her brother that does that, but Phineas, but she does a lot of she does pretty much all of the writing, at least the lyrics. And so, yeah, I would agree with you. Getting back to the question, I think this is a hard one, and I'm going to spare the listeners like my, you know, if you really want my answer, listen to every episode I've done, because I talk about it all the time and I interview artists, authors, musicians, you name it. And I ask them this question and then they usually, you know, push it back to me like, well, Greg, what do you think? I long for the days of flipping on the radio and hearing something. However, Steve, you've got a great point, and Kevin, you touched upon it, that, you know, today there's so much more freedom as to like where we can go find something, right? But I still, to this day, I go on the internet and I just feel lost. I just don't know kind of where to go. So that's why I enjoy roundtables like this, because I want to come out of every glass of wine with someone, glass of scotch, dinner, hot dog cookout, 4th of July, I want to come out of every one of those conversations with another musician that someone says, you got to check this out. Yeah. And that's really the whole point of my entire podcast. My entire business is like just people who just are addicted to getting turned on to new stuff and telling other people about the stuff that they like too. So does music suck today? No, I do tend to go to a lot of shows. Like I'm going to Jane's Addiction and Smashing Pumpkins on Sunday, which by the way, I managed to get wheelchair access for, so my leg is broken, and so I'm going to the Garden, but I do have, that's going to be cool. But I'm going to a lot of these like older shows. No, I think there's definitely a more of a platform, and if, you know, the three of us were starving artists right now, you know, we were a band and we were trying to get known, we'd have more of a platform to put it out there, but there just doesn't seem to be as much of a formula now. So I think there's more musicians, there's more artists, they're getting to do what they love, and so they might not necessarily want to make a ton of money from it, or they can't. But I also feel like it's like there's so much that maybe sometimes it's kind of diluted. I don't know. So, all right, moving on. Kevin, Beatles or Stones?
So I'm choosing Stones because if Why? You, because they're dangerous.
Steve.
Altamont. Yeah.
Beatles.
Why?
The creativity, the dynamic range. I'm not going to diss the Stones because you know that I love the Rolling Stones. They're still doing it. They're still putting out, and I've got a lot of respect for that. But if I think about music influence, I can listen to like Paul McCartney and listen to a bass line, and I get choked up as I'm like, how the fuck did he come up with that? And I don't think that happens with me with the Rolling Stones. It doesn't.
Of course, this is no knock on either, right? Whichever direction you go, I think that this really is a 50-50 shot. I don't necessarily think it's obvious. I grew up with and I don't feel this way today, and I want to be careful with my words, but I grew up with the mindset that there's opinion and then there's fact. And I used to say this, I remember I said this to a girlfriend at a restaurant, like this French restaurant. And she was like, okay, how is this relevant to our conversation? We were talking about like coffee tables or something like that. And I was like, oh, by the way, there's opinion and then there's fact. Led Zeppelin is the greatest band of all time. That's a fact. No, I think she headed for the hills after the dinner. So my feelings have matured over the years. I'm going to go Beatles, and Steve, I'm going to say a lot of what you were saying. And that's just because I think of the diversity. Now, yeah. I know that there are albums. I think we have a particular neighbor who lives in between us that would probably like throw things if he heard me say that the Rolling Stones are not diverse. They're very diverse. Yeah. I love the Stones. When I think of a Stones song, I think of grooving rock and roll that I tap my foot to and I enjoy and I love. But like you, I've never been like, oh my God, how did they write this? Now, I'm not ever saying I could write like Keith or Mick. Or Bill or anything like that. I'm just going to leave it at that because I could go on for hours about that. And I think that's an argument that at the end of the day, it's really about opinion.
I'm encouraging any listener after this podcast to just take a minute to Google the lyrics for Sympathy for the Devil.
Yes. No, good call. I know that's a tune that we jam on regularly over at Mr. Broadley's house when we play.
You can say the mullet. Too, so.
Okay. Last question, because I know we got to wrap things up here. Real quick. No thinking. Desert Island albums. Steve, go. Top five.
Medeski, Martin, and Wood.
Which one?
Led Zeppelin, Houses of the Holy.
Okay.
Beatles. Maybe can be an anthology. Beatles.
Okay.
Some kind of blue.
Miles Davis?
Miles Davis.
Kind of blue. Okay. Yeah. Oh, good. That's a good one there, Steve.
And Rolling Stones. Some Girls.
Awesome. Ooh, that's a good one too. Kevin. Steve was really put on the spot, so this is kind of unfair to Steve. Because Kevin had a couple seconds to think, and I way cheated. I had like a week to think about this, so haha. Kevin.
Maybe I should guess Kevin's is what I should do.
I had a little time. So starting U2, Joshua Tree.
Nice.
Good one.
Nice. Rolling Stones, Exile on Main Street.
Nice.
The Doors debut.
Nice, love it.
Jane's Addiction, Ritual de l'Habitude.
I remember you told me that a couple months ago, yeah.
Yeah.
And Devo, Are We Not Men? We Are Devo.
Oh my God, okay. We got to dive into that one a little later in another podcast because I want to hear about that. Okay, so my top five, I did do some thinking about this, but I know like at least I really only thought about one. The others were obvious to me. So since probably 1991, my favorite album has been Animals by Pink Floyd. That's just my number one. Since the day I heard it, or maybe a week after I saw him in concert, Wildflowers by Tom Petty, that is definitely in my top five. The Wall, that one changed my life more than Animals did, and I actually heard The Wall. Yes, I know I have two Pink Floyds in my top five, but like Pink Floyd is my be-all, end-all. There's a band out of Burlington, Vermont, that all went to UVM called Strange Folk. They were really, really big in the 90s, and then they kind of faded away a little bit. Their fans are still like rabid to this day. They have an album out that came out in 1995 called Lore, Strange Folklore. Strange Folk is the band, and that's mine. And then Metallica, Master of Puppets. So those are my... Those are my five, but I'm sure I could pick 20 others. After I made my list, I was like, oh, wait, I got to put in this. But
yeah,
I'm going to be calling you, Greg.
I'm going to be calling you like, wait a second, I want to retract that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Kevin, I want to hear about your Devo one, but that's it. That is all the time we have for now. Guys, thank you very much for joining me. Yeah. We will do this again, and we can certainly come up with more ideas. If any listeners out there have any ideas for Rapid Fire Roundtable, send me an email at gpotters@albumreview.net. Again, this is Rapid Fire Roundtable. Guys, thank you very much. I really appreciate
thank you.